So I said to you, we've got a whole other 7 gallons. I don't know what's going on.
We tried to start it. It wouldn't start.
Yeah.
So finally, we push it down the hill. Now it's uphill to the, luckily, there's a gas station right there. Now, we should say at this point, we discovered later, afterwards, after we got back on the road, there was nothing for like the next 60 or 70 miles. So, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here talking now. There'd be two skeletons out there in the desert, you know, lost street machiners, right? Yeah.
And so we push it, we get into the gas station.
We get to the gas station.
And I'm like, well, you know, let's put some gas in anyway, just to see. And it took 16 gallons of gas. So it was a little empty.
Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope, and we're going to tell you some stories.
Welcome to another episode of Car Guy Confessions with Jeff Smith. We just got two folks here first today, but first, before we do that, we have to thank the Peterson Museum for letting us sit in on their wonderful facility here. This is fantastic. This is Steve McQueen's XKSS. Did I get that right? Just for those of you who want to know. And we also want to thank our friends at ARP-Bolts.com. Couldn't do this without them. So I got my good friend here, Will Hansel, and we're just going to talk about some fun stuff that we did last summer because it's a fun story. And no one was killed. No one was killed. So we should preface this by talking for just a second about the budget beater.
Yes.
So you built the budget beater when?
Well, it's a long story, as they always are. But my dream was to have a Roadster.
Yep.
And so I'm in the magazine business, and obviously Roadsters are hard to come by.
Yeah.
And so a friend of mine bought a sedan and cut the roof off of it and made what they call a tub.
Okay.
And I was like, ooh, that's a cool idea. And so I found a sedan up in Stockton, California, and I went up there with my cousin, and we bought it. It had a title. It was just a roller. And we're driving back with it, and as is always the case if you have an open trailer, people walk up to you whenever they stop, and they're like, hey, I had a 45 DeSoto just like that.
Just like that.
And you just kind of go, okay, cool, man, thanks.
Yeah, all right.
And so this happens a couple times. I was driving my crew cab dually in an open trailer, and we had to stop for gas a lot.
Right.
And so we stop outside Bakersfield, and this guy walks up, and he goes like, 31, sedan. I got it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow. And it had no grill show on or anything. I'm like, okay, what's the story? He's like, oh, my brother's got one just like that. And there's like a pause, and he says, yeah, if you know anybody interested in selling one, he's looking for another one. I said, great. I said, well, I'm really looking for a trade. What do you got? And he's like, you know, station wagon, Nova, blah-de-blah, blah-de-blah, Roadster. And I'm like, what did you just say? And he says, yeah, he's got a Model A Roadster. And so I said, well, give me his phone number. He says, oh, I'll just tell you how to get there. So, you know, turn left at the rock and follow the barn and blah, blah, blah. And again, we find this thing, and it literally is sitting in a field, and it looks like it could drive, run and drive and everything. And it's all original. And the guy comes out, and he's looking at my car like, oh my God, you know, it's a 31 sedan. And I'm looking at his Roadster going, oh my God, it's a Roadster. And we traded. He wanted $100. We had about $91 and change in the
seats. They were pulling nickels out of the seat cushions.
And roll the roller off, put it on the side, and he gets in that thing and drives it on the trailer.
He drove it on the trailer?
Drove it on the trailer, yeah. And we were like, oh my God, it runs? He goes, wow. Yeah, it runs. And sold the...
In classic banger fashion.
Oh my God. Sold the original chassis out from under it for more than I paid for the whole car. And so we ended up with the body. I built the car and... We
took it on power tour.
Well, we took it on first power tour. I had multiple bets with people. I think you were part of that.
It was.
Nobody thought I was going to have it done, and so we were collecting $20 bills.
Nor that it would make it the entire way.
And it did.
Yeah, it did.
And so the fun part is, you know, I've heard you talk about, like, there was a ban on racing. Well, at the time, there was a ban on project cars.
Could not have one.
And
right?
So that car actually was built as a series of related technical articles.
Unrelated technical articles.
Unrelated technical articles, yes. And so that's how we got around that. There's always a way around
Because if you're a racer, you know, you figure out how to beat the rules.
Yes,
yeah?
Yes. And so I've owned that car. It was, what was the first power tour? 96?
Something like that.
95?
Yeah.
So I had that car on the road ever since then. Crashed it. I told you I crashed it in Burbank one night, racing a Porsche.
Yeah.
That was brilliant on my part. And so it's been through a bunch of different things, but I think the chassis has been rebuilt at least twice. And I was trying to find somebody back in Detroit to do it last couple years because it really was just, everything was worn out. It's got about 40,000 miles on it. And couldn't, and ended up shipping the car. I want to thank Pilot for shipping the car out here. and did a great job getting it to Total Cost Involved.
Mm-hmm.
And they those guys did a great job.
And it has
a Total Cost Involved chassis, which was the original chassis mm-hmm. that Ed Moss and those guys designed.
And you probably had a ton of miles on it by this time, too.
It's got 40,000 miles. And 40,000 I've broken
miles.
Every mount off that thing you can, and it's not their fault.
No.
So when I first got it from him, I didn't like the ride height, so we literally took two leaves out of the front cross sleeve and lowered the coils as far as they could go. And so there's no travel in
it. No suspension travel.
It beats the hell out of everything.
I can attest to that.
Yes. And so brought it out here. He redid everything. Had the rear end rebuilt by Curry because it had a bunch of miles on it. And the transmission was blown up and new transmission rebuilt and everything.
And Sean Murphy rebuilt the carburetor.
Sean Murphy and SMI did the carburetor.
You know, Sean Murphy. Ours.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was all good to go. And that's when things went south.
So we take off and start heading towards Iowa, east.
Yeah, because you live in Iowa.
I live in Iowa now, so he's going to drop me off and then go on to Detroit. And so we start the climb. It's like 103 degrees.
We got to back up on how you got involved in this.
Oh, well, yeah. So he calls me. He's telling me all this stuff that's going on. And we're talking. At some point, I said, so you're going to ship it out there, get it fixed, and you're just going to ship it back. And he goes, no, I'm going to drive it back. It's like, dude, you're going to drive the Roadster all the way across country? Yeah, the last great road trip, right? And I said, who's going with you? And you said,
nobody.
Nobody.
Yeah, just me.
That was a designed in hook.
It was not. I knew this guy had some great plan.
You go, oh, because I went, you can't do that. I mean, I'll go with you, and which is exactly what you wanted.
Well, I thought we'd have fun, but
yeah,
we did. I wasn't going to ask you because it's kind of one of those moments where you can't do that to somebody on purpose.
Because I had spent zero time in an open cockpit car.
Yeah.
I mean, zero time.
And it is
not a convertible guy, not a Roadster guy. You know, so I've never. And I hung up the phone. And I thought, what did I just do?
Yeah.
What did I just commit
to? It's a different
to?
Life.
Yeah. So now we're in the Roadster. We're leaving L.A. It's like 105
degrees. We're leaving
degrees.
Ontario, California.
Yep.
And
on the 10th
freeway. It was 106 when we drove out. which is brilliant weather to drive out in a Roadster in traffic.
In traffic.
Going up to 50.
We're not going to try and kill ourselves. We're a couple old guys, so. We'll drive up. Well, I think the average is about 400 miles a day, and we're going to get up early, drive for a few hours, park the car in the shade somewhere, take it easy for a couple hours till it cools off, and then we'll hit the road again. So yeah. And then he's going to drop me off because now I live in Iowa. I don't live in California anymore. So he's going to drop me off in Iowa, and I think one of his other brothers is going to come out, fly out, and go with him from Detroit or from Des Moines back to Detroit. So. I've heard rumors that this car has more miles on it than any other TCI chassis they've ever built. And I don't doubt it because, like I said, power tour a couple of times, and he drives the wheels off it in the summertime in Detroit. So, yeah, it's fun. But like I said, this is the first time I sat in this thing in over 20 years. So,
hey, we'd like to thank our sponsor, ARP-Bolts.com. We got a fantastic little backdrop here. They make an outstanding series of bolts, almost anything you would need for engines, chassis, things like that. In fact, we were at lunch today, and a guy asked you about the bolt on the back of your shirt, and I said, well, it's really about a head bolt. They neck the stem down of the bolt on a short small block Chevy head bolt, so the clamp load is even across three different head bolt lengths on a small block Chevy. And, you know, so that's the kind of technology that you get out of ARP. And we've all got stories on all that
right.
stuff.
Well, but, for a translation of what he said, call ARPbolts.com.
but the message is that you can't get any better than that.
No, you cannot.
There you go.
Nope.
We'd like to thank our friends at InTheGarageMedia.com. They have three fantastic magazines. They've got Classic Truck Performance. They have Modern Rodding. And my favorite, All Chevy Performance, with Nick, my buddy Nick,
oh,
is the editor.
You're so biased.
So, yes, of course. But it's a fantastic book. They're doing print media, which
yes.
is, of course, our favorite. So
in color and everything.
In color and everything.
Yes.
And you can get your car on the cover of one of those books,
right.
which is
right.
a fun
no, that's
deal.
A lot.
Great
yeah.
tech.
You great tech.
By
you know, not always written by me.
Famous
but, yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Famous people
not
yeah.
always
all the tech.
Written by me.
That's right.
Just
so
pick
check
it up and
them
read
out
it.
At yes. InTheGarageMedia.com. And they're our friends, and they will thank you. Right before
Labor Day.
Yeah, there was a hurricane supposed to hit L.A. We were a day away from getting hit by this hurricane, so we decided we had to go. And promptly got stuck in, 10-mile-an-hour traffic going up the Grapevine.
And then started climbing, climbing the 15.
The 15, I'm sorry.
The 15. And the car just immediately goes to 230. So we pull over, pour water on it, go about 5 miles, pull over, pour water on it, and I'm thinking, I didn't say anything because I didn't want to, be negative in the first 10 minutes of the drive. It's like, it's going to take us forever to get to Iowa at this point. So we get on the 10 and discover.
Well, no, we weren't even,
I'm sorry, not the 10, the 40.
No, we're not even there yet.
No, but Bakersfield.
What I figured out on the 15 was, it's not all up. You go up, down, up, down a little bit, as you go up the mountain. And so I figured out that if I put it in neutral and coasted down, we could keep it like at 230, 225-ish, and try and make some time.
And I expect any second this thing just go, right, which it didn't do.
Yeah.
So we finally stopped somewhere on the highway, and we decided to,
we turned toward Barstow.
Towards Barstow, and we're out there in the desert somewhere, and we pull off, and we start pouring water on the radiator again to get it cooled down enough, we get the cap off, which was, that took about 10 minutes. 15 minutes just to get the cap off.
Yeah, and then
I walked inside the bathroom, and you get one of these water.
You have to back up before that. You asked me, when was the last time you checked the coolant? I was like, I couldn't tell you the last time I checked the coolant. I don't know, because we'd done everything. We'd rebuilt the transmission and the whole suspension. We did all this work and everything. Never looked at the coolant.
Simple thing is you didn't check, right?
Yeah.
So we have a water bottle, so I go in the bathroom and I come out one trip at a time, right? It takes about 6 trips to fill the radiator back up.
It took a lot of
again.
Water, yes.
And I thought, okay, this will fix it, right? I think it was worth about 5 degrees.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was better.
So now it's on the other side of 230, where before it was on the right side, now it's on the left side of 230. So we keep going, and the goal was to get to Lake Havasu City. And any sane person driving a regular car would have got us there in about, 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours?
I think it's longer than that, but still, it would have been a lot faster.
It was 10 o'clock at night when we got there.
Yeah, it was 95 when we pulled into the hotel. That was the other thing. I kept telling them, it's going to cool off. It's going to cool off as we get closer to the river.
It never did.
Nope, never cooled off.
So while I'm sitting there melting in the car, I'm thinking, what else would make this thing run hot? So when we stop, I checked the vacuum advance canister. It was dead. So we stopped at your buddy's shop.
Dan Van Auken. He's a fantastic fabricator.
Wonderful guy.
And builder, innovator. And he's from Detroit, but now lives out there.
Yep.
And he saved our bacon.
Yep.
The next morning.
Then he reaches over after we put that on. Will says, "Well, I got this cracked fender. Can you TIG weld this back together again?" So he TIG welded
one cracked fender. He welded up all four.
Yeah. And then he reaches over while we're always talking. He says, "So he reaches over and grabs a fan belt. It almost came off the groove. It was so loose. And I was embarrassed because I didn't think of that." We tightened that up.
Yeah.
That was worth maybe about another 5 degrees.
It's the classic case where there's no one kill, right?
No, I fully expected it to go boom, right back to 180. It never did that. But now we're safely around 210, which you could almost live with,
Yeah.
And then, but anytime we'd do a climb, then it would start heating up again.
Well, and the other thing I changed, so my friend Dave Henniger at TCI, he was at TCI at the time. Yeah.
Now he's with SEMA.
He's with SEMA, yeah.
In Detroit.
And so we had talked about it. It always had too tight of a torque converter for around town.
That's right.
And so he suggested this street rod converter they have, which is this teeny little street rod, converter.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what size it is, but it's small. And when I got it in the box, I was like, ooh, man, that's really small. And he's like, no, it's going to be good. It has a lockup feature, and so you should be good. So I'm okay. So we put that in, and I also changed the classic, don't change one thing.
Change
14 different things. So I changed the rear gear, too, because I limit myself to 3,000 RPM. It's how I, drive down the road and not go 150 miles an hour, which anybody that's driven, you like to go, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And so I've always told myself, well, I'm not going to go faster than 3,000 RPM. So I changed the gear to slow myself down.
Okay, so put a deeper gear in.
The problem was that the converter would slip where we wanted to go 3,000 RPM.
Right,
so we
right.
had to drive a little bit faster in RPM wise. And that actually helped the temperature too to go that, faster.
Yes.
Because
the faster
the
we went, the cooler locked up. Because
because
we were running the trans cooler, which was making it run hot.
Yeah.
So.
And so I've talked to Dave about this, and he's like, yeah, if you change a converter, to try and find another converter, expect to change it 3 times. And I'm like, okay, you didn't
before
tell
you
me
get
that
it.
Before I changed the
Of course
time.
Not.
So anyway, so that was
that
so there I made a lot of changes
right,
to
right.
it.
So life is good. We're back on the road. We could have spent a couple days at
Dan Van Ocken's place.
He's a fantastic fabricator, all these stories. So we're flying down the road now. Now we're in New Mexico. And we have to preface this part of the story by saying that there's basically 2 7.5-gallon saddle tanks on the car.
Yep.
And so I'm asking him, how's this work? He said, well, I just buzz along on the right tank, and then when it goes boom, I flip the switch, it picks back up, and we take off, and we drive on the other tank, and then when you get down to half tank, whatever.
More to preface here, the fuel senders have never worked right in the thing, and I take the body off to replace the fuel senders, and so I won't do it. And so they don't, the gas gauges don't work.
It's a suggestion.
Yeah, and so basically, it kind of flops around when it's got some fuel in it.
Yeah,
and so we're driving along.
Buzzing down the freeway, and life is good, right? And we get to this freeway overpass, and the car goes boom. So he flips the switch, and he goes, bah.
I drove by the off ramp, though.
By the off ramp.
Yeah, because I feel like it's just the one tank's dead, and I'm flipping over.
So we've still got another 7.5 gallons, right? Flip the switch, boom, picks back up, goes about 100 feet, and
maybe.
Goes,
bah. It's dead stick.
We're out of gas, aren't we? He goes, yep.
Yep.
So we quick pull over. Push the car down the on-ramp, and
actually, I didn't think we were out of gas, because I was like, I thought maybe we had sucked some trash into the fuel filter, because that's happened before. When you drain the tanks all the way, you know, you can get garbage in it.
Yeah.
And so I said to you, we've got a whole other 7 gallons, so I don't know what's going on.
We tried to start it. It wouldn't start.
Yeah.
So finally, we push it down the hill. Now it's uphill to the, luckily, there's a gas station right there. Now, we should say at this point, we discovered later, afterwards, after we got back on the road, there was nothing for like the next 60 or 70 miles. So, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here talking now, there'd be two skeletons out there in the desert, you know, lost street machiners, right? Yeah.
And so we push it, we get into the gas station, and I'm like, well, you know, let's put some gas in anyway, just to see, and it took 16 gallons of gas. So it was a little empty.
It was
hammered, I would say to that.
So while we're doing this, and this is the sad part. We didn't get this on film, but we were shooting pictures, and he's taking video all the way. And this couple come up, and this guy gets out, cowboy hat, belt buckle, boots, the whole bit, right? You know, and his two young sons get out, cowboy
They're
boots,
dressed
and,
the same,
they dressed the same way, and they start asking us questions. And there's no front license plate on it, but there's a rear license plate. He's walking around the car, and he says,
Michigan.
Where are you from?
Yeah.
And he's Michigan. That's where we're going. And he goes, you're driving this thing to Michigan? About this time, the guy's wife walks up. And all she sees is, now we've not really, well, we'll show pictures of the car. It's all rusty. It look, you know, so people, you know, judge a book by its cover. And it's just the nastiest, rustiest looking thing she's ever seen. And we said, yeah, we're driving this thing to Detroit. And he goes, where's your support car? No, this is it. This is just us.
And this is like a common thing when that car, because I drive it all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
And we're out in the middle of nowhere. This gas station is in the middle of just godforsaken nowhere. And they, you know, people walk up and you get to see them like looking around. They're like, you know, where's the rest of you guys?
Right.
You know? We're like, rest of who guys? What are you talking
this
about?
This is it.
And they're like, the truck, the trailer, the other street rods, or, you know, the other cars that look like this. And Jeff and I are like, yeah, it's a car. We're just driving it. We didn't tell them we're a bunch of idiots that are suffering from heat stroke and just ran this car out of gas. And say, you know, my friend always says, you know, God protects children, drunks, and idiots. I'm not sure which one we were at that point.
Yeah,
we were one of the three.
Qualified for at least two of those three.
And so it was really funny because they were trying to figure out what we were doing.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, what was going on there. And so when we said, well, we're driving this thing back to Detroit, her eyes just went, whoa. it was like, you guys are nuts.
Yeah, the only regret that we've had is that we should have put the two boys in the car.
And that would have been
there.
Classic.
But looking back on it, and there's a series of things that happened after this. Yeah, we're not done yet. But I really believe we were hit by the heat. And we didn't realize it. We were just having a good old time, and we made a couple really dumb mistakes. And again, just got protected.
A couple lucky dogs out there on the road.
And so it worked out, but definitely the heat was a bad play.
Yep. And then we got to Tucumcari and turned left and went up, I think it's Highway 54. And I had done this trip before with my Oldsmobile when we eventually blew the motor up, but that's a whole nother story. The previous trip with John McGannon on the Oldsmobile, we had stayed in Tucumcari, got the next morning, and I'm checking out, and I see this giant map on the wall, and, you know, most highways, you know, this, and this is like this diagonal, runs across out of New Mexico, Texas, Oklahoma, and up into Kansas. And I'm looking, and it's a huge old map, and there's no roads. These are all trails. And it says on the Chisholm Trail. And Highway 54 is the Chisholm Trail. And I the lady that was checking out, I said, so 54 is the Chisholm Trail? And she goes, well, yeah.
It's really cool. You run next to this railroad track, and there's all these locomotives that are miles long.
Yeah.
I mean, like miles long, pulling coal or whatever. I didn't know what they were pulling, but you constantly see these huge rail car, you know, trains going one way or the other. The other thing that Jeff didn't tell me, so he said he wanted to do this. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Okay. So you got to remember, we're in a car with no roof and no windows. And it is a two-lane road that they let people fly on.
Yeah.
So these, you know, and it's mostly trucks. And so imagine you're a 2,000-pound roadster going down a two-lane road, and you've got, you're going 70 or 75, and there's a truck coming the other way at 70 or 75 miles an hour.
Combined
that's literally a couple feet away from you. You, like, shimmy over to the right side of the lane every time, because when they go by, it's like, whoa, hang on. And so, you know, a couple hundred of those going by every day. And so, what was the town we ended up in where we rolled in over the railroad tracks?
It was in Texas. I've forgotten.
Okay, well, it'll come to you. So I'll tell that story. So we're having all kinds of fun. We get into Texas,
and
of course,
flying 54.
And I mean, there's cool little towns.
We stopped at one little town, shot a picture next
kind
to this abandoned Mexican restaurant.
Of course, a couple burnouts might have happened somewhere along the road, and we're just having all kinds of fun. And so we get to this cattle town that Jeff liked to stay in, and we pull in, and you know, you get to the light, we turn left, and we're pulling down, and all of a sudden, engine quits. It's like, boom. And I'm like, nothing's going on. Trying to figure out what's going on. And luckily, we coast up to the top of this railroad track. Jeff pushes me.
And there's a gas station.
There's a gas station right there.
Again.
Ran it out of gas. Completely. And I'm like, I don't do this. This doesn't happen. And Jeff's yelling at me. He's like, I'm taking control of the
fuel. I am now in control.
You're going along. And I'm like, I don't want it. So that's fine. He's like, whenever we stop, because I'm always like, oh, we don't need to put gas in it because the other tank's full.
No, we're going to put gas in it. And then it turns out the hotel was across the street.
Yes.
So it was, you know,
so it worked out.
Again, fell into this thing, and it was so great. So then, and the rest of the trip, so then I started writing down notes of things you want to take account of when you're riding in a roadster. And one of the things is that Mother Nature takes care of the climate control.
Yes.
She's in
we were
control
cold,
of that.
What, outside of Albuquerque, Texas, or wherever it was. I can't remember where. We had every, and in a roadster, you don't carry that much clothing, so, and it's a rumble seat car
anyway.
And we had tools and stuff with us, so.
And antifreeze.
And all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah, so, you know, we basically had everything on that we were carrying with us.
Of course, we didn't need any of it.
Yeah.
You know, we carried it all, but we didn't need it. So yeah, it was so much fun. And then, so I started noticing things like, you know, so to describe wind noise, you know, wind buffeting above 75 miles an hour is, I described it as two of your largest, you know, strongest friends beating you alongside the head with the largest pillow that you've ever seen.
Yeah, all the wind comes from behind. People don't understand that. So
yeah,
it
hits you from behind.
The windshield blows this huge hole and you're just getting buffeted the whole time. So you get out and your neck is killing you, your back hurts, you know, you can't understand what's going on. It's just because the whole time the wind's coming from behind and pushing you around.
And then the deer signs, you know, they say danger of deer, you know, and that's significant in a little open roadster. Well, then you see the signs for the elk, and it's like, whoa. It's like, dude, we don't want to hit one of those. That's not good. So,
yeah, luckily we never saw any of those guys. But it was... I guess I would say it was a lot of fun.
It was
looking back on it, a lot of fun. It was, as with all roadster rides, for me at least, it's always funny how people react when they see you pull in somewhere.
And
that was consistent. And then when I dropped you off, you could tell them about that.
So we get into Iowa. He drops me off. He's going to take off and continue to go to Detroit. And you're going to pick up your cousin.
Yep. He met me at the airport. Yep.
And I thought by the time this was 3 full days of driving. I think it was 3 full days. Yeah.
Yep.
3 full days of driving. I was just going to be just going to sweep me into my bed and I'd be dead for a week. So I give him a quick tour of my Smith abode. And then as he's driving away, I'm going, this sucks. I want to keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, I was disappointed. I was like, I want to keep going. It was so much fun. So the lesson here is get in your car and drive it, man.
Well,
and I don't even do that. All my stuff's in the thousand pieces. It sucks, but that was so much fun. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I would do it again in a heartbeat.
You're a special guy.
Yeah, because it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So then, well, real quick, to wrap this up, you pick your cousin up.
Yep.
And what happened?
Ran out of gas two more times.
Two more times?
Yep. Yep. In the same night. Yeah, I'm an idiot. So I don't even, and then, you know, my brother-in-law lives in Des Moines, so I call him. He comes over. We spill the gas. The plastic gas thing in his Honda minivan. We were batting 1,000 there. So yeah, I was happy to get home in peace, frankly. No, we had a great. It was, you know.
I think Lori is a saint.
My wife
is a saint.
No, she, you know, she understands the comedy of that car, and so yeah, we that had been planned for a long time, mm-hmm. right? That was a long time coming.
Yep.
And again, I want to thank the TCI guys. And part of the reason I drove it back, I want people to understand that. My thought process was I wanted everybody to know that was working on that car, I was getting in it and driving it, mm-hmm. you know, a couple thousand miles at the end of it.
Yep, yep.
And so, because everybody would be like, yeah, you're driving it.
You'll
back.
Get 50 miles out of town, you'll call us, and we'll come get you.
And I was like, no, that car, it's always been built to drive. Uh-huh. I drive it everywhere.
It is. Well, you've done Power Tour how many times? Twice? Mm-hmm.
At least two times, yeah. But it's been across the country four times.
Yeah.
Oh, and man. So it. But
how many people can say that? How many street rod guys is there?
Probably not many, because they know better. Yeah. But and I think we had some tools, but I don't even carry tools with me anymore. I just figure, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to.
Again,
fix it.
Larry's statement.
Yeah, my friend Larry. Yeah. So you know, but it was a great time. I'm glad you went,
because
we always have fun together, and we compliment each other, because there are a lot of things I don't know you know, and most of the things that should be known I don't know either, so it works out perfectly. And
it worked out. It was fun.
But we probably the biggest thing for me that came up was, you know, car has no bumpers. You know, car has really no, it's like riding in a motorcycle.
Yeah. OSHA would have a fit.
you really are out there, and the roads look wide and luxuriously appointed with guardrails when you're in a regular car, but when you're in a Roadster, everything kind of tightens up a little bit.
Yep.
So, but it was fun, and I definitely would encourage people to go make those adventures.
And we did a story in Hot Rod about
it. We did.
Which
you
was
did.
Fun.
Actually, you
and
did. I didn't
I,
do it.
I called it Shadow Dancing. John changed the title because the Shadow Dancing was a reference to, I noticed that we had this distinctive shadow late in the day that you don't see with a Prius, right? You're just a bubble. But this one had the shape of the windshield and the fenders, and you could see our heads, and that struck me. You know, I probably shot 300 photos of
it. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Just pointing it out.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, I have to say something else, because it's, you can't, you know, in the old days, you could just drive somewhere and get a hotel room. Well, pretty much all the hotels are booked out. So when I picked Jeff up, I said, listen, you know, we got to go this month, this night, and or this day, and this and that.
There's a schedule.
And so he's like, why? And I said, because I pre-booked all the hotel rooms. I prepaid for them. And he's like, we're driving a Roadster. What are you talking about? We're not going to be able to make this up. I'm like, dude, we're going to, otherwise we're sleeping on a curb. There's no way. And so every day, you know, we'd have to, it doesn't seem like a lot, but you have to go 300 or so miles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a lot in a Roadster.
And then the first night, you lock the car down with like 18 different locks.
Oh,
and
you
then
have to make
lost
fun of me
the
there.
Key.
I don't want somebody to steal it. I didn't lose the key. I had properly stowed it somewhere so that nobody could find it, including us.
Including you.
Yes. And so, yeah, that took a little bit because we were supposed to meet Dan. So, it was all good. And I'm thankful you went.
Yeah, I was too, man.
Somewhere
we had
else with you
such
anytime.
A great time. Such a great time. So.